the big picture question and when to use the small focus question. The focusing question is the foundational habit I use to achieve extraordinary results and lead a big life. I use it for some things and not at all for others. I apply it to the important areas of my life, such as my spiritual life, physical health, personal life, key relationships, job, business, and financial life. And I address them in that order. Each one is a foundation for the next. Because I want my life to matter, I approach each area by doing what matters most in it. I view these as the cornerstones of my life, and have found that when I'm doing what's most important in each area, my life feels like it's running on all cylinders. The focusing question can direct you to your one thing in the different areas of your life. Simply reframe the focusing question by inserting your area of focus. You can also include a time frame, such as right now or this year, to give your answer the appropriate level of immediacy, or in 5 years, or someday, to find a big picture answer that points you at outcomes to aim for. You can ask yourself focusing questions specific to each category of your life, be it spiritual, physical, personal, key relationships, your job, business, or maybe finances. First, say the category, then state the question. Next, add a time frame, and end by adding, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary. For example, for my job, what's the one thing I can do to ensure I hit my goals this week, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary?
For my spiritual life.
What's the one thing I can do to help others? What's the one thing I can do to improve my relationship with God?
For my physical health.
What's the one thing I can do to achieve my diet goals? What's the one thing I can do to ensure that I exercise? What's the one thing I can do to relieve my stress?
For my personal life.
What's the one thing I can do to improve my skill at whatever I may choose? What's the one thing I can do to find time for myself?
For my key relationships.
What's the one thing I can do to improve my relationship with my spouse or partner? What's the one thing I can do to improve my children's school performance? What's the one thing I can do to show my appreciation to my parents? What's the one thing I can do to make my family stronger?
For my job.
What's the one thing I can do to ensure that I hit my goals? What's the one thing I can do to improve my skills? What's the one thing I can do to help my team succeed? What's the one thing I can do to further my career?
For my business.
What's the one thing I can do to make us more competitive? What's the one thing I can do to make our product the best? What's the one thing I can do to make us more profitable? What's the one thing I can do to improve our customer experience?
For my finances.
What's the one thing I can do to increase my net worth? What's the one thing I can do to improve my investment cash flow? What's the one thing I can do to eliminate my credit card debt?
Big ideas. So how do you make the one thing part of your daily routine? How do you make it strong enough to get extraordinary results at work and in the other areas of your life? Here's a starter list drawn from our experience and our work with others. Understand and believe it. The first step is to understand the concept of the one thing, then to believe that it can make a difference in your life. If you don't understand and believe it, you won't take action. Use it. Ask yourself the focusing question. Start each day by asking, what's the one thing I can do today for whatever you want to achieve, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or even unnecessary? When you do this, your direction will become clear. Your work will be more productive and your personal life more rewarding. Make it a habit. When you make asking the focusing question a habit, You fully engage its power to get the extraordinary results you want. It's a difference maker. Research says this will take about 66 days. Whether it takes you a few weeks or a few months, stick with it until it becomes your routine. If you're not serious about learning the success habit, you're not serious about getting extraordinary results. Leverage reminders. Set up ways to remind yourself to use the focusing question. One of the best ways to do this is to put up a sign at work that says, "Until my one thing is done, everything else is a distraction." We designed the back cover of this book to be a trigger. Set it on the corner of your desk so that it's the first thing you see when you get to work. Use notes, screensavers, and calendar cues to keep making the connection between the success habit and the results you seek. Put up reminders like, "The one thing equals extraordinary results," or "The success habit will get me to my goal." Recruit support. Research shows that those around you can influence you tremendously. Starting a success support group with some of your work colleagues can help inspire all of you to practice the success habit every day. Get your family involved. Share your one thing. Get them on board. Use the focusing question around them to show them how the success habit can make a difference in their schoolwork, their personal achievements, or any other part of their lives.
This one habit can become the foundation for many more. So keep your success habit working as powerfully as possible. Use the strategies outlined in Part 3, Extraordinary Results, for goal setting and time blocking to experience extraordinary results every day of your life.
Chapter 12, The Path to Great Answers. F. M. Alexander said, "People do not decide their futures. They decide their habits, and their habits decide their futures."
The focusing question helps you identify your one thing in any situation. It will clarify what you want in the big areas of your life, and then drill down to what you must do to get them. It's really a simple process. You ask a great question, then you seek out a great answer. As simple as two steps, it's the ultimate success habit. You can view Figure 17 online at theonething.com to see the two steps outlined for you. Asking a great question, which is step one, means to think big and specific. This leads to step two, which is finding a great answer. And that means research and role model.
Step one, ask a great question.
The focusing question helps you ask a great question. Great questions, like great goals, are big and specific. They push you, stretch you, and aim you at big, specific answers. And because they're framed to be measurable, there's no wiggle room about what the results will look like. Look online at Figure 18, and you'll find what we call the Great Question Matrix. Here you can see the power of the focusing question as it's laid out into four different options or quadrants. You can think big and broad, or small and broad, or even small and specific. But to get the best results, you need to be thinking big and specific. Let's take increasing sales as a way to break down each of the quadrants, using the question, "What can I do to double sales in 6 months?" This is the placeholder for big and specific. Now, let's examine the pros and cons of each question quadrant, ending with where you want to be, which is big and specific. Refer to Figure 19 online to see how each question fits into each quadrant of the Great Question Matrix.
Quadrant 4, Small and Specific.
In Quadrant 4, the question turns into, "What can I do to increase sales by 5% this year?" This aims you in a specific direction, but there's nothing truly challenging about this question. For most salespeople, a 5% bump in sales could just as easily happen because the market shifted in your favor rather than anything you might have done. At best, it's an incremental gain, not a life-changing leap forward. Low goals don't require extraordinary actions, so they rarely lead to extraordinary results.
Quadrant 3, Small and Broad.
In quadrant 3, the question is more like, what can I do to increase sales? This is not really an achievement question at all. It's more of a brainstorming question. It's great for listing your options, but requires more to narrow your options and go small. How much will sales increase? By what date? Unfortunately, this is the kind of average question most people ask, and then wonder why their answers don't deliver extraordinary results.
Quadrant 2, big and broad.
Here the question might be, what can I do to double sales? You have a big question, but nothing specific. It's a good start, but the lack of specifics leaves more questions than answers. Doubling sales in the next 20 years is very different from attempting the same goal in a year or less. There are still too many options, and without specifics, you won't know where to start.
Quadrant 1, big and specific.
In quadrant 1, the question is, what can I do to double sales in 6 months? Now you have all the elements of a great question. It's a big goal, and it's specific. You're doubling sales, and that's not easy. You also have a time frame of 6 months, which will be a challenge. You'll need a big answer. You'll have to stretch what you believe is possible and look outside the standard toolbox of solutions. Do you see the difference? When you ask a great question, you're in essence pursuing a great goal. And whenever you do this, you'll see the same pattern. The pattern of big and specific. A big, specific question leads to a big, specific answer, which is absolutely necessary for achieving a big goal. So if the question, what can I do to double sales in 6 months, is a great question, how do you make it more powerful? Convert it to the focusing question. What's the one thing I can do to double sales in 6 months, such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? Turning it into the focusing question goes to the heart of success by forcing you to identify what absolutely matters most and start there. Why? Because that's where big success starts too.
Step 2. Find a great answer.
The challenge of asking a great question is that, once you've asked it, you're now faced with finding a great answer. Answers come in 3 categories: doable, stretch, and possibility. Refer to Figure 20 online to see these 3 categories graphed out. The easiest answer you can seek is the one that's already within reach of your knowledge, skills, and experience. With this type of solution, you probably already know how to do it and won't have to change much to get it. Think of this as doable and the most likely to be achieved. The next level up is a stretch answer. While this is still within your reach, it can be the farthest end of your range. You'll most likely have to do some research and study what others have done to come up with this answer. Doing it can be iffy, since you might have to extend yourself to the very limits of your current abilities. Think of this as potentially achievable and probable, depending on your effort. High achievers understand these first 2 routes, but reject them. Unwilling to settle for ordinary when extraordinary is possible, they've asked a great question and want the very best answer. Extraordinary results require a great answer. Highly successful people choose to live at the outer limits of achievement. They not only dream of, but deeply crave what is beyond their natural grasp. They know this type of answer is the hardest to come by, but also know that just by extending themselves to find it, they expand and enrich their life for the better. If you want the most from your answer, you must realize that it lives outside your comfort zone. This is rare air. A big answer is never in plain view, nor is the path to finding one laid out for you. A possibility answer exists beyond what is already known and being done. As with a stretch goal, you can start out by doing research and studying the lives of other high achievers, but you can't stop there. In fact, your search has just begun. Whatever you learn, you'll use it to do what only the greatest achievers do. And that's benchmark and trend. A great answer is essentially a new answer. It's a leap across all current answers in search of the next one, and is found in two steps. The first is the same as when you stretch. You uncover the best research and study the highest achievers. Anytime you don't know the answer, your answer is to go find your answer. In other words, by default, your first one thing is to search for clues and role models to point you in the right direction. The first thing to do is ask, has anyone else studied or accomplished this or something like it? The answer is almost always yes. So your investigation begins by finding out what others have learned. One of the reasons I've amassed a large library of books over the years is because books are a great go-to resource. Short of having a conversation with someone who has accomplished what you hope to achieve, in my experience, books and published works offer the most in terms of documented research and role models for success. The Internet has quickly become an invaluable tool as well. Whether offline or online, you're trying to find people who have already gone down the road you're traveling, so you can research, model, benchmark, and trend their experience. A college professor once told me, Gary, you're smart, but people have lived before you. You're not the first person to dream big, so you'd be wise to study what others have learned first and then build your actions on the back of their lessons. He was so right. And he was talking to you, too. The research and experience of others is the best place to start when looking for your answer. Armed with this knowledge, you can establish a benchmark, the current high watermark for all that is known and being done. With a stretch approach, this was your maximum, but now it is your minimum. It's not all you'll do, but it becomes the hilltop where you'll stand to see if you can spot what might come next. This is called trending, and it's the second step. You're looking for the next thing you can do in the same direction that the best performers are heading, or, if necessary, in an entirely new direction. This is how big problems are solved and big challenges are overcome, for the best answers rarely come from an ordinary process. Whether it's figuring out how to leapfrog the competition, finding a cure for a disease, or coming up with an action step for a personal goal, benchmarking and trending is your best option. Because your answer will be original, you'll probably have to reinvent yourself in some way to implement it. A new answer usually requires new behavior. So don't be surprised if along the way to sizable success, you change in the process. But don't let that stop you. This is where the magic happens and possibilities are unlimited. As challenging as it can be, trailblazing up the path of possibilities is always worth it. For when we maximize our reach, we maximize our life.
Big ideas. Think big and specific. Setting a goal you intend to achieve is like asking a question. It's a simple step from I'd like to do that to how do I achieve that? The best question, and by default the best goal, is big and specific. Big because you're after extraordinary results. Specific to give you something to aim at and to leave no wiggle room about whether you hit the mark. A big and specific question, especially in the form of the focusing question, helps you zero in on the best possible answer. Think possibilities. Setting a doable goal is almost like creating a task to check off your list. A stretch goal is more challenging. It aims you at the edge of your current abilities. You have to stretch to reach it. The best goal explores what's possible. When you see people and businesses that have undergone transformations, this is where they live. Benchmark and trend for the best answer. No one has a crystal ball, but with practice, you can become surprisingly good at anticipating where things are heading. The people and businesses that get there first often enjoy the lion's share of the rewards with few, if any, competitors. Benchmark and trend to find the extraordinary answer you need for extraordinary results. Part 3. Extraordinary Results. Unlocking the possibilities within you. Will Rogers said, "Even if you're on the right track, You'll get run over if you just sit there. Extraordinary results.
There is a natural rhythm to our lives that becomes a simple formula for implementing the one thing and achieving extraordinary results. Purpose, priority, and productivity. Bound together, these three are forever connected and continually confirming each other's existence in our lives. Their link leads to the two areas where you'll apply the one thing, one big and one small. Your big one thing is your purpose, and your small one thing is the priority you take action on to achieve it. The most productive people start with purpose and use it like a compass. They allow purpose to be the guiding force in determining the priority that drives their actions. This is the straightest path to extraordinary results. Think of purpose, priority, and productivity as three parts of an iceberg. We provide a visual of this iceberg in Figure 22 online at theonething.com. With typically only 1/9 of an iceberg above water, whatever you see is just the tip of everything that is there. This is exactly how productivity, priority, and purpose are related. What you see is determined by what you don't. The more productive people are, the more purpose and priority are pushing and driving them. With the additional outcome of profit, it's the same for business. What's visible to the public, productivity and profit, is always buoyed by the substance that serves as the company's foundation, purpose and priority. All business people want productivity and profit, but too many fail to realize that the best path to attaining them is through purpose-driven priority. Personal productivity is the building block of all business profit. The two are inseparable. A business can't have unproductive people, yet magically still have an immensely profitable business. Great businesses are built one productive person at a time. And not surprisingly, the most productive people receive the greatest rewards from their businesses. Connecting purpose, priority, and productivity determines how high above the rest successful individuals and profitable businesses rise. Understanding this is at the core of producing extraordinary results.
Chapter 13. Live with Purpose. George Bernard Shaw said, "Life isn't about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself."
So how do you use purpose to create an extraordinary life? Ebenezer Scrooge shows us how. Cold-hearted, penny-pinching, and greedy, a man who despised Christmas and all things that give people happiness. His last name, a byword for miserliness and meanness. Ebenezer Scrooge might have been the least likely candidate to teach us anything about how to live. Yet in Charles Dickens' 1843 classic, A Christmas Carol, he does. The redemptive tale of Scrooge's transformation from stingy, callous, and unloved to considerate, caring, and beloved is one of the best examples of how our destinies are determined by our decisions and our lives are shaped by our choices. Once again, fiction provides a formula we can all follow to build an extraordinary life with extraordinary results. I'd like to beg your forgiveness and take a little literary license to quickly retell this timeless tale. One Christmas Eve, Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by the deceased spirit of Jacob Marley, his former business partner. We do not know if this is a dream or if it's real. Marley wails, "I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and a hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits from the past, present, and future. Remember what has passed between us." Now, let's stop for a second and bear in mind who Scrooge is. Dickens describes him as a man whose old features are frozen by the cold within him. Tight-fisted, with head down and hand to the grindstone, Scrooge pays as little as possible and keeps as much as he can. He is secretive and solitary. No one ever stops him in the streets to say hello. No one cares, for he cares for no one. He is a bitter, mean, covetous old sinner. Cold to the sight, cold to the touch, and cold of heart, with no thaw in sight. His life is a lonely existence, and the world is worse off for it. Over the course of the evening, the three spirits visit Scrooge to show him his past, present, and future. Through these visits, he sees how he became the man he is, how his life is currently going, and what will ultimately happen to him and those around him. It's a terrifying experience that leaves him visibly shaken when he wakes the next morning, not knowing whether it was real or a dream, but giddy upon discovering no time has passed. Scrooge realizes there is still time to alter his fate. In a joyous blur, he rushes into the street and instructs the first boy he sees to go buy the biggest turkey at the market and send it anonymously to the home of his sole employee, Bob Cratchit. Upon seeing a gentleman he'd once rebuffed for pleading charity for the needy, he prays for forgiveness and promises to donate huge sums of money to the poor. Ebenezer eventually ends up at the home of his nephew, where he begs forgiveness for being such a fool for far too long, and accepts an invitation to stay for holiday dinner. His nephew's wife and guests, shocked at his heartfelt bliss, can barely believe this is Scrooge. The next morning, Bob Cratchit, upon arriving noticeably late to work, is confronted by Scrooge, who exclaims, "What do you mean, coming here at this time of day? I am not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer." Before this wretched news can sink in, the incredulous Cratchit hears him say, "And therefore, I am about to raise your salary." Scrooge goes on to become the Cratchit family's benefactor. He finds a doctor for Tiny Tim, Cratchit's invalid son, and becomes like a second father to him. Scrooge lives out the rest of his days spending his time and money doing everything he can for others. Through this simple story, Charles Dickens shows us a simple formula for creating an extraordinary life. That's to live with purpose, live by priority, and live for productivity. As I reflect on this story, I believe Dickens reveals purpose as a combination of where we're going and what's important to us. He implies that our priority is what we place the greatest importance on, and our productivity comes from the actions we take. He lays out life as a series of connected choices, where our purpose sets our priority and our priority determines the productivity our actions produce. To Dickens, our purpose determines who we are. Scrooge is transparent and easy to understand. So let's revisit A Christmas Carol through the lens of Dickens' formula. At the place we enter his life, Scrooge's purpose is clearly about money. He pursues a life either working for it or being alone with it. He cares for money more than for people and believes that money is the end by which any means are justified. Based on his purpose, his priority is straightforward: making money, as much money for himself as he can. Collecting coin is what matters to Scrooge. As a result, his productivity is always aimed at making money. When he takes a break from making it, just for fun, he counts it. Earning, netting, lending, receiving, tallying, these are the actions that fill his days, for he is greedy, selfish, and unmoved by the human condition of those around him. By Scrooge's own standards, he's highly productive in accomplishing his purpose. By anyone else's, it's simply a miserable life. This would be the end of the story were it not for the perspective provided to Ebenezer by his former partner. Jacob Marley didn't want Scrooge to reach the same dead end he had. So after the haunting, what happened to Scrooge? By Dickens' account, his purpose changed, which changed his most important priority, which changed where he focused his productivity. After Marley's intervention, Scrooge experienced the transformative power of a new purpose. So who did he become? Well, let's look. As the narrative ends, Scrooge's purpose is no longer money, but people. He now cares about people. He cares about their financial circumstances and their physical condition. He sees himself happily in relationships with others, lending a hand any way he can. He values helping people more than hoarding money and believes money is good for the good it can do. What is his priority? Where he once saved money and used people, he He now uses money to save people. His overriding priority is to make as much money as he can so he can help as many as he can. What are his actions? He is productive throughout his days, putting every penny he can toward others. The transformation is remarkable and the message unmistakable. Who we are and where we want to go determine what we do and what we accomplish. A life lived on purpose is the most powerful of all and the happiest.
Happiness on purpose.
Ask enough people what they want in life, and you'll hear happiness as the overwhelming response. Although we all have a wide variety of specific answers, happiness is what we most want. Yet it's what most of us understand the least. No matter our motivations, most of what we do in life is ultimately meant to make us happy. And yet we get it wrong. Happiness doesn't happen the way we think. To explain, I want to share an ancient tale with you.
The Begging Bowl.
Upon coming out of his palace one morning and encountering a beggar, a king asks, "What do you want?" The beggar laughingly says, "You ask as though you can fulfill my desire." Offended, the king replies, "Of course I can. What is your desire?" The beggar warns, "Think twice before you promise anything." Now the beggar was no ordinary beggar, but the king's past life master, who had promised in their former life, "I will come to try and wake you in our next life. This life you have missed, but I will come again to help you." The king, not recognizing his old friend, insisted, "I will fulfill anything you ask, for I am a very powerful king who can fulfill any desire." The beggar said, "It is a very simple desire. Can you fill this begging bowl?" "Of course," said the king, and he instructed his vizier to fill the man's begging bowl with money. The vizier did, but when the money was poured into the bowl, it disappeared. So he poured more and more, but the moment he did, it would disappear. The begging bowl remained empty. Word spread throughout the kingdom, and a huge crowd gathered. The prestige and power of the king were at stake, so he told his vizier, "If my kingdom is to be lost, I am ready to lose it, but I cannot be defeated by this beggar." He continued to empty his wealth into the bowl. Diamonds, pearls, emeralds. His treasury was becoming empty. And yet the begging bowl seemed bottomless. Everything put into it immediately disappeared. Finally, as the crowd stood in utter silence, the king dropped at the beggar's feet and admitted defeat. "You are victorious, but before you go, fulfill my curiosity. What is the secret of this begging bowl?" The beggar humbly replied, "There is no secret. It is simply made up of human desire." One of our biggest challenges is making sure our life's purpose doesn't become a beggar's bowl, a bottomless pit of desire continually searching for the next thing that will make us happy. That's a losing proposition. Acquiring money and obtaining things are pretty much all done for the pleasure we expect them to bring. On one hand, this actually works. Securing money, or something we want, can spike our happiness meter, but only for a moment. Then it goes back down. Over the ages, our greatest minds have pondered happiness, and their conclusions are much the same. Having money and things won't automatically lead to lasting happiness. How circumstances affect us depends on how we interpret them as they relate to our life. If we lack a big picture view, we can easily fall into serial success seeking. Why? Because once we get what we want, our happiness sooner or later wanes because we quickly become accustomed to what we acquire. This happens to everyone and eventually leaves us bored, seeking something new to get or do. Worse, we may not even stop or slow down to enjoy what we've got, because we automatically get up and go for something else. If we're not careful, we wind up ricocheting from achieving and acquiring to acquiring and achieving without even taking time to fully enjoy any of it. This is a good way to remain a beggar, And the day we realize this is the day our life changes forever. So how do we find enduring happiness? Happiness happens on the way to fulfillment. Dr. Martin Seligman, past president of the American Psychological Association, believes there are five factors that contribute to our happiness. Positive emotion and pleasure, achievement, relationships, engagement, and meaning. Of these, he believes engagement and meaning are the most important. Becoming more engaged in what we do by finding ways to make our life more meaningful is the surest way to find lasting happiness. When our daily actions fulfill a bigger purpose, the most powerful and enduring happiness can happen. Take money, for instance. Since money represents both getting something and the potential to get more, it makes for a great example. Many people not only misunderstand how to make money, but also how it makes us happy. I've taught wealth building to everyone from seasoned entrepreneurs to high school students, and whenever I ask, "How much money do you want to earn?" I get all kinds of answers. But usually the number is quite high. When I ask, "How did you pick this number?" I frequently get the familiar answer, "I don't know." I then ask, "Can you tell me your definition of a financially wealthy person?" Invariably, I get numbers that start at $1 million and go up from there. When I ask how they arrived at this, they often say, "It sounds like a lot." My response is, "It is, and it isn't. It all depends on what you do with it." I believe that financially wealthy people are those who have enough money coming in without having to work to finance their purpose in life. Now please realize that this definition presents a challenge to anyone who accepts it. To be financially wealthy, you must have a purpose for your life. In other words, without purpose, you'll never know when you have enough money, and you can never be financially wealthy. It isn't that having more money won't make you happy. To a point, it certainly can. But then it stops. For more money to continue to motivate you will depend on why you want more. It's been said that the end shouldn't justify the means. But be careful. When achieving happiness, any end you seek will only create happiness for you through the means it takes to achieve it. Wanting more money just for the sake of getting it won't bring the happiness you seek from it. Happiness happens when you have a bigger purpose than having more money fulfills, which is why we say happiness happens on the way to fulfillment.
The power of purpose.
Purpose is the straightest path to power and the ultimate source of personal strength, strength of conviction, and strength to persevere. The prescription for extraordinary results is knowing what matters to you and taking daily doses of actions in alignment with it. When you have a definite purpose for your life, clarity comes faster, which leads to more conviction in your direction, which usually leads to faster decisions. When you make faster decisions, you'll often be the one who makes the first decisions and winds up with the best choices. And when you have the best choices, you have the opportunity for the best experience. This is how knowing where you're going helps lead you to the best possible outcomes and experiences life has to offer. Purpose also helps you when things don't go your way. Life gets tough at times, and there's no way around that. Aim high enough, live long enough, and you will encounter your share of tough times. That's okay. We all experience this. Knowing why you're doing something provides the inspiration and motivation to give the extra perspiration needed to persevere when things go south. Sticking with something long enough for success to show up is a fundamental requirement for achieving extraordinary results. Purpose provides the ultimate glue that can help you stick to the path you've set. When what you do matches your purpose, your life just feels in rhythm, and the path you beat with your feet seems to match the sound in your head and heart. Live with purpose, and don't be surprised if you actually hum more, and even whistle while you work. When you ask yourself, "What's the one thing I can do in my life that would mean the most to me and the world, such that by doing it, everything else would be easier or unnecessary," You're using the power of the one thing to bring purpose to your life.
Big ideas. Happiness happens on the way to fulfillment. We all want to be happy, but seeking it isn't the best way to find it. The surest path to achieving lasting happiness happens when you make your life about something bigger, when you bring meaning and purpose to your everyday actions. Discover your big why. Discover your purpose by asking yourself what drives you. What's the thing that gets you up in the morning and keeps you going when you're tired and worn down? I sometimes refer to this as your big why. It's why you're excited with your life. It's why you're doing what you're doing. Absent an answer, pick a direction. Purpose may sound heavy, but it doesn't have to be. Think of it simply as the one thing you want your life to be about more than any other. Try writing down something you'd like to accomplish and then describe how you'd do it.
For me, it looks like this. My purpose is to help people live their greatest life possible through my teaching, coaching, and writing. So then, what does my life look like? Teaching is my one thing, and has been for almost 30 years. At first, it was teaching clients about the market and how to make great decisions. Next, it was teaching salespeople in the classroom, during sales meetings, and one-on-one. Later, it was teaching business classes. Then it became teaching high performers the models and strategies they need for high achievement. In the last 10 years, it's been teaching seminars on specific life-building principles. What I teach is what I then coach and is supported by what I write. Pick a direction, start marching down that path, and see how you like it. Time brings clarity, and if you find you don't like it, you can always change your mind. It's your life.
Chapter 14. Live by priority. Alan Lakin said, "Planning is bringing the future into the present so that you can do something about it now."
"Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" asked Alice. "That depends a good deal on where you want to go," said the cat. "I don't much care where," said Alice. "Then it doesn't matter which way you go," said the cat. Alice's classic encounter with a Cheshire cat in Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland reveals the close connection between purpose and priority. Live with purpose, and you know where you want to go. Live by priority, and you'll know what to do to get there. When each day begins, we each have a choice. We can ask, "What shall I do?" or "What should I do?" Without direction, without purpose, whatever you shall do will always get you somewhere. But when you're going somewhere on purpose, there will always be something you should do that will get you where you must go. When your life is on purpose, living by priority takes precedence.
Goal setting to the now.
As Ebenezer Scrooge profoundly discovered, our life is driven by the purpose we give it. But there's a catch even he had to confront. Purpose has the power to shape our lives only in direct proportion to the power of the priority we connect it to. Purpose, without priority, is powerless. To be precise, the word is priority, not priorities. And it originated in the 14th century from the Latin prior, meaning first. If something mattered the most, it was a priority. Curiously, priority remained unpluralized until around the 20th century, when the world apparently demoted it to mean, generally, something that matters, and the plural priorities appeared. With the loss of its initial intent, a wide variety of sayings like "most pressing matter," "prime concern," and "on the front burner" pitched in to recapture the essence of the original. Today, we elevate priority to its former meaning by adding highest, top, first, main, and most important in front of it. It would seem priority has traveled an interesting road. So watch your language. You may have many ways to talk about priority, but no matter the word you choose, to achieve extraordinary results, your meaning must be the same. One thing. Whenever I teach goal setting, I make it my top priority to show how a goal and a priority work together. I do this by asking, why do we set goals and create plans? In spite of all the good answers I get, the truth is we have goals and plans for only one reason, to be appropriate in the moments of our lives that matter. While we may pull from the past and forecast the future, our only reality is the present moment. Right now is all we have to work with. Our past is but a former now, our future a potential one. To drive this point home, I started referring to the way to create a powerful priority as goal setting to the now, to emphasize why we were creating a priority in the first place. The truth about success is that our ability to achieve extraordinary results in the future lies in stringing together powerful moments, one after the other. What you do in any given moment determines what you experience in the next. Your present now and all future nows are undeniably determined by the priority you live in the moment. The deciding factor in determining how you set that priority is who wins the battle between your present and future selves. If you're offered a choice of $100 today or $200 next year, which would you choose? The $200, right? You would if your goal were to make the most money from the opportunity. Strangely, most people don't make that choice. Economists have long known that even though people prefer big rewards over small ones, they have an even stronger preference for present rewards over future ones, even when the future rewards are much bigger. It's an ordinary occurrence, oddly named hyperbolic discounting. The farther away a reward is in the future, the smaller the immediate motivation to achieve it. Maybe it's because objects that are farther away appear smaller, so people mistakenly assume they really are and discount their value. That might explain why so many people would actually choose the $100 today over twice the amount in the future. Their present bias overrides logic, and they allow a big future with potentially extraordinary results to get away. Now imagine the devastating impact living this way every day could have on your future self. Remember our conversation on delayed gratification? Turns out that what starts out as marshmallows can later cost you much more. We need a simple way of thinking to save us from ourselves, set the right priority, and move closer toward accomplishing our purpose. Goal setting to the now will get you there. By thinking through the filter of goal setting to the now, you set a future goal and then methodically drill down to what you should be doing right now. It can be a little like a Russian Matryoshka doll, in that your one thing right now is nested inside your one thing today, which is nested inside your one thing this week, which is nested inside your one thing this month. It's how a small thing can actually build up to a big one. You're lining up your dominoes. Figure 24 on theonething.com shows you how to figure out what you should be doing right now by using goal setting to the now. It starts by asking, what's the one thing I want to do someday? And gets more and more specific until the present moment, when it asks, based on my daily goal, what's the one thing I can do right now? To understand how goal setting to the now will guide your thinking and determine your most important priority, consider the following litany. Based on my someday goal, what's the one thing I can do in the next 5 years to be on track to achieve it? Now, based on my 5-year goal, what's the one thing I can do this year to be on track to achieve my 5-year goal, so that I'm on track to achieve my someday goal? Now, based on my goal this year, what's the one thing I can do this month so I'm on track to achieve my goal this year, so I'm on track to achieve my 5-year goal, so I'm on track to achieve my someday goal? Now, based on my goal this month, what's the one thing I can do this week so I'm on track to achieve my goal this month, so I'm on track to achieve my goal this year, so I'm on track to achieve my 5-year goal, so I'm on track to achieve my someday goal? Now, based on my goal this week, What's the one thing I can do today so I'm on track to achieve my goal this week, so I'm on track to achieve my goal this month, so I'm on track to achieve my goal this year, so I'm on track to achieve my 5-year goal, so I'm on track to achieve my someday goal. So based on my goal today, what's the one thing I can do right now? So I'm on track to achieve my goal today. So I'm on track to achieve my goal this week. So I'm on track to achieve my goal this month. So I'm on track to achieve my goal this year. So I'm on track to achieve my 5-year goal. So I'm on track to achieve my someday goal. I hope you hung in there and listened to the entire thing. Why? Because you're training your mind how to think, how to connect one goal with the next over time until you know the most important thing you must do right now. You're learning how to think big, but go small. To prove its value, just skip the steps by asking yourself, what's the one thing I can do right now so I'm on track to achieve my someday goal? It doesn't work. The moment is too far from the future for you to clearly see your key priority. In fact, you can keep adding back in today, this week, and so on, but you won't see the powerful priority you seek until you've added back in all the steps. It's why most people never get close to their goals. They haven't connected today to all the tomorrows it will take to get there. Connect today to all your tomorrows. It matters. Research backs this up. In 3 separate studies, psychologists observed 262 students to see the impact of visualization on outcomes. The students were asked to visualize in 1 of 2 ways. Those in one group were told to visualize the outcome, such as getting an A on an exam, and the others were asked to visualize the process needed to achieve a desired outcome, such as all of the study sessions needed to earn that A on the exam. In the end, students who visualized the process performed better across the board. They studied earlier and more frequently and earned higher grades than those who simply visualized the outcome. People tend to be overly optimistic about what they can accomplish, and therefore, most don't think things all the way through. Researchers call this the planning fallacy. Visualizing the process, breaking a big goal down into the steps needed to achieve it, helps engage the strategic thinking you need to plan for and achieve extraordinary results. This is why goal setting to the now really works. I have this dialogue with people every day. It's particularly effective when they ask me what they should do. I turn it around and say, before I answer your question, let me ask you something. Where are you going? And where do you want to be someday? Without fail, as I walk them through goal setting to the now, they catch on quickly and come up with their own answers. And by the time they tell me the one thing they should be doing right now, I laughingly ask, so why are you still talking to me? Your last step is to write down your answers. Much has been written about writing down goals, and for a very good reason. It works. In 2008, Dr. Gail Matthews of the Dominican University of California recruited 267 participants from a wide range of professions, such as lawyers, accountants, nonprofit employees, and marketers from a variety of countries. Those who wrote down their goals were 39.5% more likely to accomplish them. Writing down your goals and your most important priority is your final step to living by priority.
Big ideas. There can only be one. Your most important priority is the one thing you can do right now that will help you achieve what matters most to you. You may have many priorities, but dig deep and you'll discover there is always one thing that matters most. Your top priority. Your one thing. Goal set to the now. Knowing your future goal is how you begin. Identifying the steps you need to accomplish along the way keeps your thinking clear while you uncover the right priority you need to accomplish right now. Put pen to paper. Write your goals down and keep them close.
Pull your purpose through to a single